Mr. Macmillan, Reel 7. You were describing getting your food and how we
get the food, come down. The rum fanny would be in the end of the table, and you all got your cup, which later on sometimes it was a jam jar. You all get your cup, and your measure was poured out. But as I say, that was watched meticulously in case you had to watch, you know. Believe me, you had your rum. If there was any left in the bottom, there was a bit of a discussion how it got left. But never mind, it was all, that was all. And then the cooks of the mess got the plates and put your dinner out. And nine times out of ten, you probably find this, if you ask anyone else, it seemed to be at 12 o'clock, that ship always seemed as if it was changing course. And your dinners would be sort of... not like a luxury liner where they put tablecloths and wet them to stop your plate slipping. You had to... there was a little ledge on the end of the mess table that stopped them falling over. But sometimes you had to chase them around the mess table for a while, you know. And then you had your dinner. And then the cooks of the mess would wash up because you'd have to leave food for people coming off watch at 12:30. I mean, you must understand, even in peacetime, you had your watches, like quartermasters, signalmen, telegraphists. You had them, and they had to be catered for. That was washed up, everything put away in the racks for the cups, the plates, the saucers, the knives, the forks and spoons. And of course, when you finish washing up, it was like the water was a bit greasy. And you went up and you tipped your greasy water down the gas chute. Then you would hear the odd knife and fork that you hadn't left go down with it, you know. As if to say, you know, what was he all saying? Tinkle, tinkle, little spoon. Knife and fork will follow suit. And then you either had work in the afternoon. You had... your flags to examine?
Before we come to the work, which we will do, obviously, can we finish off the description? We've done the basic description of the ship and the oil mess and so forth. Who was commanding this vessel?
Well, all tribals were commanded by a commander. And I believe that any commander that got command of a tribal was among the elite. They were all specially picked. Then you would have a commander. You'd have a lieutenant commander as your number one. If anything happened to you, you would have a lieutenant as an engineer officer, which in my second ship we had a brilliant engineer officer, Scott Simons. you'd have maybe a couple of... sub-lieutenants. One ship in the flotilla would carry the flotilla doctor. The flotilla leader would carry the senior navigating officer, senior torpedo officer, the flotilla gunnery officer, staff officer, and the flotilla signal officer. But they normally saw would have a commander, a lieutenant commander, who would be the first lieutenant, a gunnery officer, who would be a lieutenant, the engineer officer, lieutenant, you'd have maybe a couple of sub-lieutenants, and you may have a couple of midshipmen from Naval College doing training, and you may have a commissioned warrant officer. Now, a commissioned warrant officer normally would come through the ranks. And that was the one man that if you were in watch with, you could not fool. Because he knew all the tricks of the trade with coming through. And when you were on with him, our chat was very good. you knew that if you'd done anything wrong, that he would know. More so in the seaman side, because there'd be an ex-seaman come through the ranks. But quite a lot of them were brilliant watchkeeping officers, really, really good. That would be your officer commission. Your other side, you would have your coxswain, who was the chief petty officer on board. He handled all the disciplinary matters and what watches you went to, your cruising station, your action station, and etc. You'd have a chief torpedo officer who would look after your torpedoes and your depth charges. ERAs who were all petty officers, that's your engine room officers. Your chief stoker and petty officer stokers. And this may come as a surprise to a lot of people, but your torpedo men on board the destroyer were responsible for all electrical equipment. You didn't have electricians as they know them today. Torpedo ratings looked after your depth charges, torpedoes, all electrical equipment on your ship. So they had to be quite. And then your mess decks, you had the boys' mess deck forward. Seamen. You had seamen above you. Opposite you, you had the quartermasters, bosun's mates, not radar, your anti-submarine ASDIC ratings. Our mess deck, you had signalman telegraphists and the two cooks. Later on, we had more. Then in the stoker's mess deck, it was all stokers. That was roughly the complement of your ship.
How many men in all?
You had peacetime, I think about 190 and maybe 10 officers. As things got more, you had more officers with different things getting fitted to your ship.
Do you remember the name of your first commanding officer on the ship?
Commander McLaughlin.
What was he like?
I was only with him for about 2 or 3 months, and then he went away to cruisers. And then we got another gentleman, Commander Joe Selby. Quite a character was Joe Selby. I was with him until the ship was sunk in 1941.
And what was he like, then, Selby?
Good, but strict. But he did make allowances, you know, under the circumstances. He was quite a good commanding officer, not as good as the one I eventually finished with.
Which we'll come to.
Which, uh-huh.
What, in your opinion, as a sailor of many years, what made a good commanding officer on a destroyer? What were the skills that you looked for?
Normally, the commanding officer destroyer was not professionally skilled at any one gunnery or torpedo. He had a good knowledge of everything, which under the circumstances he had to have. He had to be strict, but he did have to understand the lower deck, which on a destroyer was very, very important. Big ships, I don't know. But Commander Selby was... Commander McLaughlin went on to actually command cruisers later on. Joe Selby, I think he was a destroyer man all his life. It's hard to explain. They had to have a damn good knowledge of everything.
What about the first officer that you mentioned? Do you remember his name?
No, not on the first ship. I will. Yes, I do. Lieutenant Commander. It was a double barrel name. He was a bit of a rogue, actually.
In what sense was he a bit of a rogue?
Going ashore and running bills up, not paying for it, you know. This all come out later on. I can't remember his name.
Who was in charge of you on your first ship? Who was actually your commanding senior person?
Away from the operative branch was the chief yeoman of signals. He was overall command of the signal department, and you had the chief petty officer, telegraphist, who was in charge. And then, as I say, you had the coxswain, who was more or less not in charge, but he was the senior petty officer. You had a gunnery petty officer, torpedo officer, which was in charge of them all. We didn't have a signal. You always had an officer detailed as a signal officer, but you could have had a seaman. You got that, you know.
Do you remember the name of your first chap who was in charge of you?
No, you know, I've got photographs of them in there, but... No, I wouldn't.
Life in such a cramped space, you'd have to get on pretty well together. Were there altercations? Were there fallouts?
Oh, yes, you had a few arguments, etc. But it's surprising how you come to accept living in that small space. You must understand, it wasn't small. Like, from this wall to my front door would be the... I've got all the particulars in my book. I've got the length, the width.
Well, that's okay. Yeah, you were saying that you know...
It'd be about 30 feet abroad. I don't know how many feet you find all that out in the literature. But you got to get on with everyone. I can't say I've ever seen any fights. Arguments, yes, but not any fights, no. I've seen some have a few too many drinks, but I've never known to cause a great deal of trouble. The woman less... taken down and tucked into the hammock, you know.
Can we look at your working day now, that you would, as a seaman and a signaller in particular? Shall we say, what time would...
Well, a working day, 6:30. The boss's mate would come round, wakey-wakey and what have you not, you know. And if he didn't wake up, he would give the bottom of your hammock a knock. Lashed your hammock up, put it away, went up, washed, changed into whatever rig of that day may have been, went and got breakfast, went and made the tea, whatever it was, a cup of tea.
It was this typical food that you'd been used to since you'd come into the Navy?
Yes.
Same food.
Later on, there was a bit of a variation. We had... I think you lined up divisions, and you were inspected by the officer of the day, which was strict in peacetime, not strict in wartime. And then you went about up onto the flag deck, washed it, wiped it down, tested all your equipment, all the slumps. Seen everything was in order. The signal distributing office, you kept it nice and tidy. And then, on top of that, you had watchkeepers watching for signals from other ships. because it was quite busy in peacetime, you know. Can I see you and can you see me? And, commanding officers will meet on board the flotilla leader and make appointments with maybe lads that wanted to go and see the dentist. That. Dinner for an hour. And then back to the sort of same thing in the afternoon. If you had a making mend, you either had a bit sleep or seen to your kit. At night time, you just sat down and played Ludo or cards, read a book. You had a little library on board. It only contained about 60 books. You got a bit sick of them then, you know. But that was your day's work.
Can you describe the watch organisation?
Yes, you had 8 until 12. Well, 12:30, allowing for the changeover. And then until 4, 4 to 6 was the first dog, 6 to 8 was the second dog watch. Then 8 until midnight, midnight until 4 in the morning, 4 in the morning until 8, and that was it. They were all 4-hour watches except the two dog watches, which split the watches up.
Was there a reason for that?
Yes. Let me put this in plainer words. If that had been a 4-hour watch, you'd have found people on the same watches too often. That broke the watch system up with just having the 2 hours. That was more so later on in life when that come in.
And you were allocated to a watch, were you? If you were on duty or whatever it was, you were allocated to a watch.
You were allocated to a watch by the chief yeoman. You didn't. Seamen went on starboard watch or port watch. Signalmen didn't. The yeoman of signals and the telegraphist chief petty officer and the stoker petty officer, they allocated the signalmen, telegraphers and stokers in to various watches. The seamen, the coxswain done all that. They cleaned their guns and looked after Peterman, etc.
How many of you might be on a particular watch out of your whole group?
Well, this is where you have two different peace and war. In peacetime, we had a chief yeoman, a yeoman, a leading signalman, three signalmen, and I think two ordinary signalmen, which would give you 8. Now, when the war started and they started too many ships, and you were lucky if you had 4 or 5. But you had to still carry on the same duties. If you were receiving a message from someone, you would always be a signalman handy, could write down. And you always had a signalman that went down to the office and showed them whatever signal come in and got them to sign to make sure they read them. If it was for the captain, obviously the chief yeoman or the yeoman went down. Some signals didn't apply to the captain. It was private to the doctor or whoever, made a padre or something like that, you know. That's what your day consisted of, just...
Well, for each particular watch during a 24-hour period, there were, what, one or two signalmen on each watch changing over?
Well, then again, peace to war, we have a change here. But you say, normally there'll be two of you. Of course, I mean, you had great flashing lights, whereas when war come, they were rather subdued, you know, smaller lamps. Maybe two. The yeoman, the signalers, or one of the leading signalers would probably come up and have a look around to see that everything was all right. As I say, we'll come to the war.
Because you,
as
you
we progress.
And as you said, you need to have a constant watch on the ships around you in case of signals coming into you.
Well, you're watching all the ships around you. You can read other people's signals. Don't misunderstand me. You pass your time reading maybe Charlie to Dick, that's of no interest, so you forgot it. And you just walked around the bridge where you could have an all-round view. One particular problem was if there was someone astern of you making a signal, and you had the haze from the funnels, it distorted it. But you see, you nipped across to the other side, because the oldest lamp was on about 10 to 12 feet of cable. You could move around. And you had single lamps on either side. You had two oldest lamps, a couple of 10-inch lamps, and then you had the big 14-inch lamps, one either side, which I don't ever remember ever using, to be honest with you. Oh, that was interesting. It was sometimes more interesting reading other people's signals than your own. And of course, if it was important, you had to go down through the right, tell the officer of the day, and he would go and tell the appropriate people what was what. If you felt a bit lonely, you could, unofficial, you could walk down to the quartermaster on the quarterdeck through the night. And more so in harbour and wartime. And our electricians, actually lives in Sunderland, put a cable in on the quarter deck where we could put the oldest lamp into, a little switch. That was unofficial. And you and the quartermaster could have a bit talk. And if you had a signal, he could write it down for you. Whereas if you're on your own, you had to read it and try and write it at the same time. Because you didn't have the signal staff. I always seem to be in watch with an Irishman, Mick O'Neill. He was also the quartermaster. Nice lad. He come from, funny thing, he come from the Southern Ireland, and he was serving in our Navy. Yes.
You would be an ordinary signalman at this point in time, were you? On your first ship?
Yes, drafted to the Mashona as a signalman.
And I also forgot, did this mean an increase in pay because you're now a skilled man?
Oh yes, as you stepped up from second class to first class to boy, from ordinary signalman to signalman, what we called from signalman, you went to signalman, trained operator.
And what kind of pay would you be getting now?
Yes, I can't remember the wages.
Did you get some kind of a badge on your sleeve as a signalman when you passed your tests and everything?
Cross flags. And those cross flags remained until you become a leading signalman. And then you got a star. And then as you progress, that was an active leading signalman. Then when you passed for a leading signalman, you got another star under the flags. And that was that until you become a yeomanry signalman, which is a petty officer, and you got the crown. That is the years in barracks up until April 1939.
So you did mention the fact that uniforms are very varied on a destroyer. What kind of clothing might you wear in a day?
Now, this we're still talking. Yeah.
We're talking about your first ship.
Yeah. I think number threes, I think that was just the ordinary blue suit with the blue jersey. That was your normal day. But if you were going up to, we'll say, do a bit polishing, painting, you put your overalls on. And that was more or less number three. Number twos, I think, would be a collar on top of that. And number ones, that was only used for church divisions and any, if you had any visiting admirals or anything like that. Nighttime, when everything was finished, at 6 o'clock, you could wear whatever you wish, within reason, in your mess deck. 9 o'clock, you had the captain's rounds. But it was not always the captain. It could be the officer of the day, it could be the first lieutenant, just to make sure everything was tidied and within order. He only had a quick glance round, you know, and he was off again. And then you just please yourself, have a game of Ludo, cards, have a smoke. When you played Ludo, the stakes were very high, normally a cigarette. I've seen hundreds of cigarettes on the table. Some of them didn't smoke. You know, I think we got 20 for fourpence. We had a little canteen. When you get that chocolate, a drink, goffer bar, as they called them on the big ships, I think. With a canteen manager and a canteen assistant.
And did it sell alcohol, the canteen?
No. No. No, you got, to the best of my knowledge, you had your rum, which a few of us bottled for any special occasion. The only time I can remember was, I think Christmas, I think you got a bottle of beer, which was carried on through the war, which didn't taste very nice, I can tell you. I think it was Christmas Day, where you put streamers up and things like this. One or two little things I'll tell you when that's not on, because it could embarrass certain people. You know, Christmas Day, I'm trying to think, did we get turkey? I think we had all the works on Christmas Day. How the cooks managed it in that galley, I shall never know until this day. Your tea, you made, there was a tap at the side of the galley, which was always plenty of hot water. You had a fanny, which, with the thing in the middle with the tea in, no, there was no tea bag.